You're listening to Potty Mouth Radio, the home of movies, music, television, and comedy. The following podcast contains spoilers and rude words. We watch a thing. We watch a thing. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to We Watched a Thing with Billy and Dave. It's a big movie this week, ain't it, mate?
Yeah, a little old thing. Yeah. Jeez, we're overdue for a big release this year. I'm sick of these tiny little fucking indies.
Let's get straight into it. We are, of course, this week talking about Dune Part 2, which is a 2024 American epic science fiction
how
film.
How you Dune?
It's directed by Denis Villeneuve, who co-produced and co-wrote the screenplay with John Spates. It stars a massive cast.
Everyone in Hollywood.
Including Timothée Chalamet, Rebecca Ferguson, Josh Brolin, Stellan Skarsgård, Dave Bautista, Zendaya, Charlotte Rampling, and Javier Bardem, as well as Austin Butler, Florence Pugh, Christopher Walken, Leah Seydoux, and Suaya Yacoub. Forgive me there.
and your Taylor Joy.
Oh, in one shot. usually I ask you what the plot is, but I'm not going to do that this time, mate, because I am going to leave that up to our good friend Josh Brolin. Did you see this amazing post from him a couple of weeks ago?
No.
All right. I'm going to leave him to give us the plot synopsis, because here is what he said. Dune 2 release is less than 2 weeks. Robot Lady and Wonka fall in love. Then Elvis tries to fuck it all up while his bad dad floats in a pool of pond scum. The WWE dude from Guardians gets super pissed while Midsummer Hottie puts the eyes on Wonka Obi-Wan just after his mum gets caught taking LSD in a sandy bathroom. Chigga still doesn't like the guy from the Goonies.
Oh, fuck,
you,
I love
you cannot him. Get better than that. You just can't.
Fucking horrid stolen about half my jokes, but I don't know what I'm going to talk about now.
Well, let's get straight into it. This movie then, of course, has been doing extremely well at the box office, doing extremely well review-wise. There was a brief period there where it took over as the number one on IMDb Top 250. Which, I mean, it was obvious that was, you know, the first people who see this and review it are going to be people who want to see it and who are into this style of film. So, of course, that score is going to drop over time as more and more people see it. But more and more people are going to see it. I think this is going to be a pretty big fucking film. And
yeah. Well, it was the biggest. Was it the biggest opening weekend in history or something? There was some mental stat that
I read. Yeah, right. Yeah. And I think it's going to do obviously a lot better than the first one, which of course had the sad side effect of coming out during COVID. I would be very surprised if we did not get a third film.
Has he not already confirmed that he's doing Dune Messiah?
He's already written it, but no confirmation from the studio. They were waiting to see how this one did.
We're getting it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, and, you know, jumping ahead to the end, but he's kind of...
Oh, he's set up for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's get straight into it then. So this movie's been received really well world round. What did we think about it? What did you think, Dave? Tell me about your viewing of Dune 2.
All right. Well, this movie's a fucking masterpiece.
It is so damn good. Like, there's no hiding the cards here. There's no point hiding the cards. This is an exceptional movie. This blows the first one out of the water for me. I liked the first one.
And that's a big fucking statement, because the first one was hard to criticize, really. But you've got one long film that's almost all set up. And this is just, I mean, that's what happens when you split a novel in two. The first half is kind of building up to all of the stuff.
Yeah.
And the second film is all of the stuff.
I think there are ways to execute it slightly, but I liked the first one, but not as much as the rest of the world seemed to. You know, to me, if you're talking first film...
It's no Fast 10.
But to me, if you're talking first film in a series, I don't think it's possible to beat Fellowship of the Rings. I think Fellowship is a perfect film that is both set up and excitement. I think that Dune Part 1 was a lot of setup, leaving all the excitement till now. And I mean,
how much of that criticism can you lever point at Denis, and how much sort of has to go to Frank?
Well, yeah, possibly.
You're working with what you got, and if all the good shit's in the second half of the book,
yeah,
Either you chop the book up and kind of remix it, and then all of the fanboys go to town on you, or you just deal with the fact that you do what you can with what is essentially, you know, a big, long, slow crescendo up and then kind of ends just before the cymbal crash and leave it all for part two.
This is such a good movie, though. So I saw this on opening day at a 10 a.m. session, super empty cinema. There were three of us there. I mean, mind you, it's a weekday. One of the other people who happened to be there was Topher, who'd also taken the day off work to go see it. We weren't sitting with each other. He was with another mate. But he came up to me afterwards. Yeah.
That's hilarious.
He came up to me afterwards and said, I have never left a movie feeling so like, I can't even remember the wording, but the fact that the quote unquote good guys win at the end and you feel miserable about it is such a great turn by Denis.
The reason, and I love David Lynch, and I love the 84 Dune. I know it's a terrible adaptation. I mean, Dino De Laurentiis, you know, raped it left, right, and center. It's not what it should have been. All the problems, blah, blah, blah. I've still got a huge soft spot for it because it's got Lynch all over it. But the big failing of that film is that Paul is the hero. It's a really traditional hero's journey. The guy comes into his powers. He beats the bad guys. End of film. Whether that was Lynch's intention or if that's just how De Laurentiis, that's sort of after he got to it, that's what ended up being. But that's the only big failing of that film for me.
Yeah.
Villeneuve has correctly portrayed Paul.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who is not the hero of this franchise.
No, no.
And you know, spoilers for a 60-year-old book that may be made into a film if this one makes enough money. But he goes on to, you know, cause a jihad that kills 60 billion people.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
He's not really a good dude in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah.
And I really liked that you got that towards the end of this.
The first half of the film is
sort of continuing the first one. You know, Chalamet is our hero, but you're really sour on him towards the end, and you leave the film with, you know, Charney's your hero, and he's very much going down a dark path, which I loved.
I mean, I have never considered myself a giant Chalamet fan. I thought he's done fine work in the past. I haven't seen Wonka, which I've heard is surprisingly actually good. But let me tell you this, he is fucking great in this film.
And the way that
him and Zendaya have incredible chemistry, and for them to actually make me care about them.
I've spent half the film talking to my mate Simon going, I feel really bad for Tom Holland.
Yeah. But it works so well because it has to. The only way this film works is if you care about them when you get that final hit at the end.
And the fact that relationship, I mean, that gut punch at the end when, and it's kind of hard to, because I know the story of this, I'm sort of putting myself in the shoes of someone that doesn't, but what I imagine is a gut punch when he says, I'll marry Flo.
Yep.
And you go to Charney's face and it's literally like the rug's been, she's like she's just been punched in the stomach.
Yeah.
She's so good in this film.
Yeah. Denis' direction throughout the entire thing is extraordinary. This, and honestly, the budget for this film, not really that high. When you consider how long this film is and how many action set pieces there are, the entire thing is set on another planet. This is actually a fairly low budget.
I mean, I should have done my own work, but I'm shit at this. But I'm a terrible podcaster. What is the budget?
$190 million.
No.
Yes, that's a high budget. Don't get me wrong. But for this film, that's low.
Close to twice the length of a lot of films.
Yeah.
And it's got as much in it as, what's some recent big budget? Fast 10. I know, I love to need this film just because you gave it nine. But what was the budget for that? Close to $300 fucking million dollars.
$340 million.
Fucking hell. Vin Diesel, you're a joke.
But it's very unclear with that one as to how much of the budget is included in Fast X Part 2. I don't know what's happening. Are you really trying to make excuses? You know, but so this is, you know, look, it's not half the budget. Yeah.
Longer.
Look, it's not the $80 million that was spent on the creator or the $15 million that was put into Godzilla Minus One.
To be fair, there is a lot more in this than the creator, it's a lot longer.
Yeah.
So this is an extraordinarily good looking film. Amazing looking
this
film.
This is beautiful. Like, not just the set pieces, all of the visual effects, the worms, even very simple things. When the Harkin soldiers are kind of floating, you know how they do that kind of floating up and down thing?
And it's not just the floating, but the shadows as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it doesn't look like they've just removed, you know, strings in post. It's seamless. It's so smooth.
Yeah.
That I was sitting.
They have real weight to them.
Yeah. That amazing sequence where Paul's seemingly wakes up, but he's been communing with his fetal sister, which is all.
Yeah.
Let's not even fucking dwell on that too much. It's all a bit ooey, but he's been talking to Alia mentally, and he sort of wakes up and. The Harkonnens have landed over the ridge, and they're all sort of quickly, you know, scurry over here, scurry over there, and then you've got the Harkonnens walking around. They find Jameis's body left on the sand, and then they hear the thumper. They go, "Oh, worms coming!"
Yeah,
and then float up, and they're sort of like floating, but also like it's like when you see a. In something like ISS or something that's set in space where they're weightless, but they're kind of flicking themselves along with their hands as they go up this cliff. And I'm looking at it going, look, I'm by no means an expert. I don't work in the industry, but I've seen enough films. I've seen enough behind the scenes stuff. I know most of the kind of bigger, more widely used tricks of how you accomplish this shit. And I'm still looking at some of these things going, how the fuck did they do that?
Yeah, because there's such a simple effect that can look so bad. It's so easy for an effect like that to just turn and look really, really bad. And in this film, everything looks phenomenal. Fucking Paul riding the sandworm. It would be so easy for that to be a bad sequence. Not even just the look of it, for it to come across as kind of cheesy and, you know, we've just had the Avatar series where they're constantly, you know, riding animals and, you know. Yeah. But
the sense of scale with these sandworms.
Yeah.
I mean, 84 Dune, they seemed big, but the sense of scale and speed and everything you get from these things and the sand and the wind rushing against you while you're riding them.
Yep.
Everything is so well conveyed. It's amazing.
Yeah, 100%. And everything is just elevated by the incredible, incredible score from
Zimmer.
Which
Zimmer,
honestly...
Oh, my God.
Zimmer's back,
Zimmer
baby.
Gone off the... Oh, thank you. He'd gone off the boil for me a little bit.
Yeah.
But, like...
A little bit. This is, I mean, he got too far into the bong game. Like, he zimmered his own ass.
Fucking Nolan.
But this film here is just, this is his best score since Dune. and that was his best score since, God, I can't even think how long ago.
I'll put in a vote. The best thing he'd done since True Romance. And True Romance, he was... It's not even original. He was just riffing off Badlands and Terrence Malick. But it was still the best thing he... I haven't loved a score of his since True Romance until Dune.
Yeah.
And this dwarfs Dune.
This is incredible.
Work... And it's hard to kind of delineate where... Because I know... From watching documentaries and things, he's surrounded by a support. It's not all just Hans sitting there solo creating magic. He's got a little team around him who probably don't get enough recognition, much like the VFX industry. But Michael Geiger as well, the vocalist that did all of this Artica stuff.
Yeah.
Holy shit, that is a from the... Even before you get the Warner Brothers logo, you've got Geiger doing his Sarka chant.
Yeah.
With the, you know, what is it? Who controls the spice?
The spice.
Whatever it is. Oh, fuck. I was just, the minute that started, I was like, oh, okay, yeah. Here we go. 3 hours of awesome.
Yeah. And it really was. It started strong and it didn't let down. Like I said, the first Dune I liked, but I'm not going to lie, I felt the runtime on that film. And I felt,
really?
I did. And I felt the pacing at times was a little bit off. This film, it just from start to finish, you're engaged and you care. And it's just sci-fi magic. Like, this is the best Star Wars film since Star Wars. This is almost as good as John Carter.
If Messiah can even match this film,
yeah,
this will be the greatest trilogy of all time. This will beat Spider-Man Spider-Verse as the greatest trilogy of all. Because I rewatched part one the night before.
So I probably should have done that. In fairness,
I saw this last night at a 9 o'clock session, and I'm old, so. I mean, I've got insomnia, so I don't go to sleep when I should. But by midnight, I'm starting to doze up on the sofa.
Yeah.
I was literally, even in the reclining gold class seat, I was still sitting upright for almost the entire runtime. But I rewatched part one the night before, so night before last, and came out of that thinking, this is even better than I remember. This is... leaving aside the fact that the plot is kind of all crescendo and no payoff, then that's fucking Herbert's fault. The actual filmmaking is kind of flawless. There's yeah. not really anything I could pick faults at. I didn't feel the runtime, and this is, you know, kids didn't go to bed till fucking 10:30 at night, so I was watching this into the wee small hours of the night on my TV, and even then I was like, is it over? Fuck, I yeah. want more. Can't wait till to it. You know, Villeneuve is just, fuck, he's just I on mean, a fucking tear at the moment.
Not just at the moment. I was going to say, I think pound for pound, I don't think that there is another filmmaker that you could compare to Villeneuve in terms. I don't think Villeneuve has had a bad turn. I mean, you think
no.
his film before Dune was Blade Runner 2049, which, believe yeah, it or not, is better shit. Than Blade Runner.
Yeah.
Before that, we had Arrival.
That's not true, but it's an amazing film.
Before that, we had Arrival, which, yeah. again, an incredible film. And even when you look at his earlier filmography, Prisoners,
he has not even made a mediocre film.
No, the man is incredible. And I'm sure that you saw as well the quote from him this week talking about how he doesn't care about dialogue in films. He wants film to be about the cinema experience.
And boy, haven't people run with that like a fucking dog with a bone. Oh, my God. That is not even a noteworthy comment.
No. And also, you only need to look at this film to see that. Like, I mean, look, I think this is a well-written film. I think the dialogue is very good. But that's not what makes this film what it is. What makes this film worth seeing is what he's done with the dialogue. Yep. It's the way that it is filmed, the way that it is put together, the way that everything happens. And it's just incredible.
And there are other directors that I think have not done a bad film, but they haven't
Ben Affleck.
Done the body of work. in Phantoms. They haven't done the body of work. So like Robert Eggers, 3 for 3, amazing. But yeah. it's 3 fucking films. It's,
yeah.
You can't compare them.
Yeah.
Even Del Toro or Iñárritu or, you know, these other guys. It's there's a long space between the good stuff. There's a lot of producing. Villeneuve is just churning them out one after the other, and they're all gold.
Yeah, just not missing.
And they're just getting bigger and bigger and better. So, pound for pound, I can't think of another director on par with him. Even Fincher has had...
No,
you know, Mank is a bit of a dud step, I think. Nolan
is
cold. Villeneuve has the big budget film. And even this, there's so much heart to the characters and things. Nolan couldn't have made this film.
Oh, no. Nolan could not make this film. Speaking of Fincher, it was funny. Nusk and I had it was our anniversary the other night, so we got some Asian food. We're like, let's have a movie night. So we threw on Panic Room because neither of us had seen it. Yeah, incredible film. We'd never seen it, but Panic Room was so good.
I was just thinking the other day, I need to rewatch that because it's the only Fincher I haven't seen since it came out.
I think it's highly underrated in terms of Fincher.
I went back and looked at it and went, because when it came out, it's fairly early Fincher. I didn't know who Jared Leto was. I didn't know, you know, there's fucking Kristen Thingies, the daughter of Stewart.
Isn't she? Yeah. Yeah.
I'd forgotten that because I didn't know who she was. This is pre-Twilight, pre-everything. I didn't know who she was.
Yeah.
So I do need to rewatch that.
I think it's underrated in Fincher's filmography. We rewatched The Game afterwards, which Noose hadn't seen.
I love that movie.
Well, so do I, but you know what? On a rewatch? It's not even been that long. I feel like the last time I watched it was only about 2 years ago. I reckon it slipped in my estimation a little.
Wow.
Yeah.
See, whereas, I would have put that number 2 after Fight Club in the entire Fincher. I'd put that above 7.
Yeah. Whereas Villeneuve, I've rewatched all of his films at least twice. Not a single miss. He's just next fucking level.
Mm.
Let's talk about some of the other performances in the film. We touched on, Chalamet. Zendaya is incredible.
Anyone bad?
The chemistry between them is so good. I tell you who really surprised me was Javier Bardem. He's
amazing.
He's incredible.
He is so funny and he has so much heart. Yeah. And coming off the back of a few roles where he's amazing, but the roles themselves are quite cold.
Yes. Yeah.
And he is just so amazing in this.
Yeah. He's so funny. But like not out of place funny, like you sometimes get in a film like this.
He's fun, but he's also got scenes where he's almost heartbroken. Oh,
yeah.
He's saying, kill me. I believe in you that much. Kill me because you need to speak in this fucking meeting.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yeah. Amazing. I mean, honestly, there's not a bad performance. I've seen some people talk about Dave Bautista. I think Batista's good in this.
This is the best thing he's ever fucking done.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Austin Butler, I haven't seen Elvis, but fuck, that's a good turn as our villain.
He's the only good... I mean, you know how much I fucking abhor Baz Luhrmann. That film, it might be the best thing he's done since Strictly Ballroom, but it's still a horrific experience to watch. But Austin Butler is amazing. He transforms.
Yeah, okay. Well, he was unlike
Tom Hanks, who's an embarrassment. But
he was really good in this. And I'm sure it comes straight from Herbert, but great character design. You know, the full bald, the kind of sludge mouth thing he's got going on. Just fantastic.
Oh, well, we've got to talk about Greg Fraser. I do want to talk about the cast more, but you've just kind of segued into Giddy Prime now. And Greg Fraser's decision... That, I mean, you know, Villeneuve went along with it, but to shoot in infrared on Giddy Prime, that looks fucking incredible.
Yeah.
And ballsy as hell, because there's no going back. It's not like you can tweak it if you don't like. If you shoot like that.
Yeah. That's the lens you use. Yeah.
Yeah. And it looks that it is in an amazing film.
Yeah.
That is the sequence that I think is the most impressive. That took my breath away, how good that... And that entire fight scene with those...
Oh, man.
Cool fucking... I could have done with more of the big kind of hammerhead, whatever the fuck they were. They looked like big black slender men with hammerheads.
Yeah. I mean, we're jumping all over the place here. But again, while we're on it, I need to talk about the choreography of the fight scenes because the final fight scene... between Paul Atreides and old sludge mouth Elvis is so fucking good. It's the best. Oh. It's the best choreographed fight scene I've seen since The Princess Bride.
That little hand-to-hand corkscrew dive thing that Paul does. I still don't even know how. I don't know that a human can do that, but I can't imagine how you would choreograph that with wires or anything.
It's so well choreographed. I just think that it was exceptional. I think all the fight scenes are really good. There's some really good early ones as well where Zendaya's fighting the Harkonnens and, you know, Paul. But that final fight scene. It's been
the case. Even in the first film, the Duncan Idaho's hallway fight scene in two parts, essentially, you think it's over and then there's a whole nother bit. But the fight choreography through both of these films has been pretty sensational.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I know that it would be. Quite the long sitting to watch these as one film, but I'm going to do it. I'm going to put together a fan edit for myself where I take the credits out of the first film and just let them run back to back because I think that would be pretty great to watch.
I'm waiting until Messiah's out and I'm going to do all three of them.
Yeah. Back to the cast. I mean, Rebecca Ferguson as the Lady Jessica.
So good.
Yep. Really. I mean, again, I kind of don't even see a point in bringing everyone up because all I can say is there's not a bad performance in this film.
The only thing I'll say about the cast is why the fuck did they make such a big song and dance about the secrecy around Anya being in this when she's in it for 3 seconds and it's the only role she could, you know. There was no surprise in who she was playing. As soon as it was like, oh, it's a secret. I was like, oh, okay, well, they're probably going to shoehorn an adult and Alia into this somehow because there's no one else that it could be.
Yeah, yeah, but...
The only surprise was that it was the 3 seconds worth and that's but, it.
You see, but obviously she... I mean, and I know this even from the 1984 Dune, which for they must have messed with the timeline. Did that continue on to Dune Messiah or Children of Dune? Because
no,
Alia,
this
because Alia is in the 1984 Dune.
Yeah, and she should in the book. Yes. So, if my memory serves correct, if we were following the books exactly, she would have been born, and she would have been there in the final throne room scene.
Yeah,
a la the Lynch film with a little baby Alicia Witt.
Yeah.
Villeneuve decided, no, she's going to be a fetus the whole time, but I'm going to have a flash forward to her as an adult.
Yeah.
That's his
I mean, because, I mean, obviously, Anya Taylor-Joy, I mean, if a third film does happen, I mean, you know, that's your draw.
Oh, give me an entire film about Alia.
I wanted because, more Florence Pugh.
She is a bigger part, obviously, when you look at the whole scale of 6-7 books or whatever. Alia is a major fucking player.
Yes.
So this is a massive teaser for
she
future
is
films.
The quiz at Sederach.
How can this be? There's a top 10 for us in the future. Yeah. Top 10 Lynch films. Yeah. I'm all over that.
I wanted more Florence Pugh in the film.
I'm feeling the one cynical thing I'll inject into this is the whole Anya Taylor-Joy thing. And the way it was played through the media, and oh, why is she on the red carpet? Oh, it's a thing. Is that Villeneuve throwing a bit more wood on the fire to get the funding for movie 3?
Probably.
I feel cynical, but... and I don't like to say it because he's done this movie is fucking flawless and amazing.
I mean, it is. You got to remember the first film came out during COVID, so when you look at the box office of that film,
yeah,
it's shockingly
totally
low for what it should be. So the studio was probably scared because, you know, here we are on the second film and they didn't really have a ballpark idea for what performance would be. They knew the first one was critically really well received, but they couldn't point to the box office of it. So, you know...
Well, that's just cinema in general now. We're still... I mean, it... kind of feels
studios
like
are eating themselves.
COVID feels like a million years ago, but from a business point of view, no one really has an idea what cinema is.
No.
You know, how far have we bounced back? We've had a couple of big.
Well,
releases.
Here's the problem: studios are really eating themselves at the moment. Like MCU, take it for example. Why would anybody go to the cinema to see an MCU film when they know it's going to be released on Disney Plus within about 40 days? Disney are eating themselves. It just doesn't make any sense.
Their business model is probably not a good example because they went so far. I mean, it's like their risk assessment guys that said COVID's going to last for 10 years. You need to realign your entire business right now or you're going under. And the world just rallied faster and now they're still going, oh, shit, our entire business model is geared around streaming.
Yeah, because they're making some cooked decisions. Like, you know, I mean, to actually scrap physical media entirely, that's just cooked. They've gone too far now. They can't turn back on Disney Plus now. They can't scrap it.
The good thing for people like us is there is now a business model for the likes of Umbrella Media and the likes of Shout and the likes, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, you of all people who are now basically the go-to guy for fucking commentaries.
Did I tell you that I did Orphan yesterday?
No.
Yeah, great film.
With them or someone else?
With them, yeah.
when do I get a fucking guest spot?
We did Dracula 2000, which just got announced today as well.
Yeah, well, fuck that.
You can't say that, mate. No, go buy the Blu-ray, people.
I bought fucking Voyage to the Stars or whatever that bullshit one was from the 50s. That's a fucking terrible film just to support you. So fuck off. But it's open to companies like Umbrella and Arrow and these guys that do amazing, beautiful collector's editions and things, I don't reckon would be having the boom that they're having now.
Yeah.
If all the big guys hadn't gone, fuck, physical media's dead, we're not going to do it anymore. And suddenly these little guys have swooped in and go, oh, okay, here's a poster, here's a t-shirt, here's a fucking hardcover book of essays from, you know, luminary. Yeah.
I mean, there'll be a resurgence. I mean, look at vinyl currently. Like, vinyl now is the medium to go. For the last couple of years, it's been outselling CDs as far as physical media goes.
Yeah, for sure.
So, no, there'll be a resurgence.
And then you've got people like Disney Plus who are not only eschewing physical media completely, but then out of the blue, they'll just remove several hundred things from their streaming library without much, you know, more any warning.
I mean, look, this all seems off track, but I'll bring it back to Dune by saying go see Dune Part 2 at the cinemas. Don't wait for streaming. This needs to be seen on the biggest screen you can.
Because I stupidly had, I mean, I went to Gold Class because I'm a lazy fat cunt who likes to recline, but it was shot in IMAX, so I'm going to go and try and see it in IMAX because I'm going again tomorrow.
I've got the day off work and I'm a bit sick at the moment, but if I wake up well tomorrow, I'm going to see Dune Part 2 again because I loved this film. I loved it.
100% the best film of the year. And yes. Look, there's a lot of cool stuff that I'm really excited about this year, and we need to do our most anticipated episode so that we can kind of put that stuff on record before it comes out.
Yeah.
But I genuinely don't see anything beating this. This is my number one of the year, and if it's not my number one of the year at the end of the year, I will be astonished.
Yes,
yeah, pretty. It's a perfect film, or as close as you can get.
Well, I'm gonna. I mean, fuck it. Here we go.
Drop your sound drop. Come on.
Big Dizzle's big call. 10 out of 10.
Is it a big call?
10 out of 10. I usually, you know, this is a 10. I'm not waiting to see it a second time. I'm saying it now. I think this is, for me, a flawless film. I've heard some critique, people that I very much admire and respect and trust their opinions. I've heard, you know, some critiques about the film.
And you still trust their opinions?
I don't have any. I think that this is just flawless. It's the best sci-fi film in many a year, and I honestly, even the reason I went in without rewatching Part One was I kind of wanted to see it at least once without that fresh memory of it to see how it stood up. I think it holds up. I think you could walk into this without even having seen Part One, and I think you'd be fine. It's easy to follow. The characters and everything are there. I loved this film.
Yeah, everything about it is. I can't fault it. The only reason I'm not doing a 10 is because I just categorically refuse to do that on something that I've this recent. But so I'm a 9.5, but I'm with you. Our good mate Jason was 5 out of 5 on this. I haven't seen any other reviews, but as far as I'm concerned, the three greatest reviewers on the planet have all basically said it's a near perfect film. So get out, see it in a cinema. The biggest screen you can find, the best sound you can find, because the sound is incredible. Yeah. This is one of the best films of the last 10 years.
100% it is. Yep. All right. Excellent. Well, next week, we're going to have a little bonus episode on Monday where we're going to talk about Night Shift, new China Brothers film. We had a great chat with them last week, and you can go listen to that bonus episode now. And then next
lovely
week...
Lovely fellas.
Next week, we've got the Oscars, mate. We're going to be on the red carpet.
Oh, my God. That's, this year's going quickly.
Yeah. So next week.
I didn't even have my frock ready.
Next week, we'll do our Oscars recap and also hopefully check out the new Blumhouse horror Imaginary, which I'd imagine would be an Oscars front runner next year. So
I don't want to watch the bear thing. The bear thing looks like a piece of shit.
Well, I mean, we'll play some jazz with it. Maybe we'll see something else, but there's nothing else out. So. Oh, actually, you know what we could do? We could do the new Netflix.
You know what I could
Netflix
do instead
filming?
Of watching that bear that Blumhouse bear film? I'll get a colonoscopy and you can fucking film that.
We could do the new Netflix film with Sandler, Astronaut, Spaceman.
I'm actually more keen for that because
all right, let's do that.
Much as I hate the Sandman, that actually does look good.
And the week after that's actually an empty slot, so maybe that's when we get to our most anticipated.
Yeah, I think so. We're overdue for that. And yeah. There's a lot of shit coming.
All right. Well, that's it from us this week here at We Watched a Thing. Don't forget to go check out the rest of the Potty Mouth Radio Network, especially Hunt for the Perfect Album.
PottyMouthRadio.com. It's a website and all.
Yeah, it's live now. You can go subscribe to Hunt for the Perfect Album right now. First 9 or so episodes are there, with more coming every week. So check it out. If you
We've recorded about 35 or something.
Yeah, sure have. If you want to help support the network, you can do that at patreon.com/pottymouthradio. You can find us on all the socials at Pottymouth Radio. Join our Facebook listener group, which is a great time. And we'll catch you next week.
Hello, goodbye.